sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Mm, it's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny
it's
day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Our phone lines are open, or you can text us your questions at 57500. Top of the hour feature is starting seeds indoors, and this, Ton, is something people can do today.
It is. And so local garden centers have seed starting kits along with the box stores in their, in their garden center sections. And starting seeds indoors is something that I think a lot of gardeners eventually try. And it's something that just up front that some of them after they've done it, they're like, that's too much work, too much mess. I'll just buy the plants
from
the garden center.
And then if you don't move the lights or have the lights just perfect, then you don't get, you're not successful.
You're not. And so there are some things that you need to know before you just plant seeds and decide to grow them out. And so the first thing you mentioned is lighting. And a lot of times people will try to grow their seeds next to a window. And if you're going to do that, it has to be a south or a west window. And you need to be careful because sometimes, you know, in March, it can get quite warm and those temperatures can reach over 100 degrees because of the light coming through. And so you have to, you might have to shift your plants around. The other thing you can do is build an inexpensive what's called a light bench, and it's basically a frame using shop lights that are, I think, around $22 a piece, but you hang a couple of shop lights and then put your seed trays underneath there, and that will usually give you enough light so that the plants will be able to make it and grow outside.
Okay. And you also have to think about what you're planting and when you're going to plant it outside, because otherwise you get some big gangly plants that you,
you can't plant
outside.
And so the next thing you need to look at is your timing. And so Michelle, our crack producer, has posted a fact sheet, I believe from North Dakota this time, but it has a fairly thorough list of vegetables and flowers on how many weeks ahead you need to plant them before they are planted outside. And so, you know, right now, a couple of weeks ago, the broccoli, the earliest cool season plants, if you were going to start them indoors, should have been started last week for mid-March planting, but you can still do them now. But even planting seeds outside, it kind of gives you that timing so that you're not getting these big gangly plants. You know, and tomatoes 6 weeks ahead of when you're putting them outside, peppers four, or they're saying 9 weeks. So it, the fact sheet will give you that timing.
Okay, I want to go back to the kits for a minute because there are positives and negatives to kits. So, but you don't have to use a kit
to
do this.
You don't. And so the benefit to a kit is that the soil, the trays, and the covers for the trays, the clear domes, all included. And you just put the seeds in and off you go. You water it in. But the kits can be a little limiting because they may not have enough room or too much. And so another thing you can do is just purchase pony packs or flats and then put your seeds in the pony packs in the flat and grow the numbers you want so that you have enough of everything.
All right. Back to the lighting for a minute, because to me, the lighting is one of the most important things here. Describe how close to the plants the lights should
The lights need to be 6 to 8 inches above the tips of the plants.
So when it's just soil, 6 inches above that soil.
Correct. And as they grow, you raise the lights, because not only can the lights be too far away because you lose energy exponentially for every inch away from the light you are, but you can also scorch your plants if the lights are too close. And so that 6 inches for the shop lights with the fluorescent bulbs and the LEDs is the ideal height so that the plants are getting enough light, but you're minimizing the chance that you're going to scorch or bleach the leaves with the light being too intense.
All right, next crucial thing is watering. You can't go a day without watering some of these.
Yeah, you can't, but you need to be careful. And so what I would recommend doing before ever planting is you never plant seeds into dry soil. And a lot of times these kits are pretty dry. And so you take the soil and put it in a bin or a large container, and you slowly wet it so that it is the consistency of a wrung out sponge. You should be able to feel the moisture, but you shouldn't be able to squeeze water out of it. After you do that, put that into your trays or flats, and then put your seeds in. And so as you put the soil in, especially if you're using pony packs or individual cells, you fill them about halfway and just kind of tap the tray on the table you're working from or the bench to settle the soil and then fill it the rest of the way up. And that will prevent air pockets, but with that gentle tapping, the soil will be at the right density so that the seeds can grow and you've eliminated the air pockets in it.
When I've done this, I've watered these with a spray bottle. Is that the preferred way to go?
It is. There's two options. You can bottom water, and that's where you would get your sink or a large basin and put a couple of inches of water in the bottom. And because the trays and flats have drainage holes in the bottoms, you just set them in the water.
Oh, that's so messy.
It is. And so you have to let them bottom soak and the water will percolate to the top of the soil.
If you have a greenhouse, that's great.
It is. But if you do this, what you're going to have to do is transfer them to another basin that's dry and let the water drain for another half hour because it drips everywhere. So that's one method. But the other method, once you have that soil to the consistency of that wrung out sponge, you can top water with a spray bottle, and you may need to do it a little more frequently for a day or two as that water kind of fills up the air spaces. But those seeds, if you have a plastic dome or something over the top of them, you probably won't need to water again that much. But the edges dry out a little more quickly, but a spray bottle is perfect because you can spot water with good accuracy where you see the soil drying out. Once you see the plants germinating, the domes come off, and after most of the seeds have germinated, you can transition over from the spray bottle to a watering can that you just use very gently so you don't blow the plants out of their cells.
Okay, this is a great hobby, but what things can people actually plant indoors they're going to be most successful at? Actually, it's worth it.
I would start, the easiest things to germinate for me have been marigolds. Super easy. They germinate well, especially if you have little kids. You want to plant them about 6 weeks ahead of the last average frost. Great starter because they germinate well. Tomatoes are relatively easy. Peppers are relatively easy. Other flowers are going, some of them are going to be easy. So sweet alyssum is another one that's relatively easy. But those are the ones I would start with. Because some of the vegetables, especially flowers, though, require 12 or 16 weeks. And so that means you're planting petunias sometime in late January to have them ready for May. Mm-hmm. And it gets a little trickier because the seeds are small and almost dust-like. And so you need to be super careful. And so when you get comfortable with marigolds and the tomatoes and peppers, then you can start working with other things. But you want to work out the kinks with those because they are going to be the easiest before attempting something like a petunia.
Yeah. And some things aren't worth it. Like, for example, zucchini. It grows so easily from seed outdoors and so quickly that it's not worth planting it inside.
No. And so the melons in general are a little harder to transplant. And if you want to have success with them, you actually want to start them in a pot or a container that's tall, 3 or 4 inches, and then only have them in there for 2 to 3 weeks, and then take them out and just slit the sides of the container because they don't like their roots to be disturbed. Mm-hmm. And so if you're going to do that, it's one of those that, you know, I would just plant the seeds.
All right. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. And Michelle has put up on the KSL Greenhouse page more information about planting seeds indoors. And you can also call us at 801-575-8255. Text us 57500. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Or you can text us at 57500. Ton, our next listener wanted to know about starting lettuce and spinach inside. They wondered if they plant the seeds in bunches, in small containers, and then set them out in bunches, or do they need to separate them?
They can go either way. The lettuce seeds especially are small enough that you almost have to plant them in bunches. And then you just let it grow as a bunch and go plant it outside, and that's fine. But I've seen people grow them out and just kind of salt and pepper them into a flat without cells, and so the flat only has soil in it. And then they'll go in and scoop the soil and separate the plants out individually. But for me, the seed is usually cheap enough that I just prefer to plant it in the little bunch.
So with smaller seeds, that's how you deal with
that's
them.
Fine. I mean, there are a lot of flowers like that. The
petunias
mm-hmm. are one. And those, if you get them, they're called encapsulated, but you can buy petunia seeds that have a coating on them, and the seed is still really small, but at least you can handle them. And those you can put individually. But if you're just using standard petunia seed, one thing that I've seen people do is they will get a salt shaker and fine grain sand and put the seed into the salt shaker with the sand, and it's mixed up, and they just salt shake it on top of the flat. And that can be a good way to get even distribution over a flat that you later go in and just scoop them up and then transplant them into cells.
Next listener is asking, they didn't harvest their dahlia tubers in the fall, and they're wondering, do you think that they survived the winter?
Unless they had 6 inches of steer manure over the top or some sort of compost over the top, they probably did not survive.
There is a complication, too. It's in an above-ground planter box.
Oh, they did. I say that. Now watch them come back. But if it's been warm enough, but if those planter boxes froze, they're done.
But I've even tried planting tulips in planter boxes, and unless you water them during the winter, they do not survive either.
No.
They're kind of problematic in that way. Next listener says they have a new backyard. How close to the fence can they plant semi-dwarf fruit trees?
A semi-dwarf tree gets 20 to 25 feet tall, and so that with an equal spread. And so with the trunk 12 feet away from the house, the tree will eventually touch the house. Hmm. So I would minimally 10 feet if they just have no room, but 15 feet would be better. And then with some pruning, they would have a little bit of space between the house and the tree.
Okay. Dorothy is on the line in Taylorsville. Good morning. Dorothy, what was your question?
Good morning. I planted a ginkgo tree 2.5 feet from a sidewalk. Is that going to be problematic?
In 50 years. They're so slow growing. They're so slow growing that you will probably never see it become problematic. And 50 years down the road, it may.
Okay. Well, I could move it 6 inches, but that's about all.
Inches isn't going to make a difference. I would just leave it intact.
Leave it in. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dorothy, for your call this morning. Next person wants to know when to put down iron for maples, and can you trim branches on maples now?
The maples actually should have been pruned a month ago. And you can still do it, but they may bleed a little bit. I mean, you know, the reason we're tapping maples right now for sap for maple syrup is because there's sap flow, and so it won't harm the tree, but you may want to consider in the future pruning them in mid-January. Once maples are in the ground after a couple of years, you want to do the pruning you need to do and then leave it alone, because the more pruning you do, especially If it's Norway maple, the more susceptible they become to internal rot diseases and other diseases like verticillium and phytophthora. So if you plant maples, the general policy is to prune them as minimally as possible and plant one that is not going to overwhelm the space you planted it.
Okay. Carol is on the line in Lehigh. Good morning, Carol. What was your question?
Good morning. I have little brown spots all in my grass. I don't know if it's because of the snow being on it or something, but it looks like those spots are dead. Everything else is coming up green. What do I do with it?
Is it in a shaded area or?
It is in shaded, sunny. It's my entire lawn.
Well, snow mold, we have had so little snow cover this year that snow mold likely would only be problematic in shaded areas and where you have had snow piled, but even then it would be pretty rare. And so are the spots fairly evenly distributed or just some here,
yeah,
some there? They're evenly distributed?
Yeah.
What I would recommend, like, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, it just looks like spots everywhere.
It just doesn't give me enough to say, oh, it's this. And so I would need some pictures. And so you could get on Facebook Messenger and send some over to the KSL Greenhouse Show on Facebook, or you could email some to an email address, which is gardenhelp@usu.edu, since you live in Utah County. But I need pictures because, unfortunately, you know, oh, I've got brown spots in my lawn is pretty much like going to the doctor saying, I have a headache. Why?
And this is giving me a headache.
Yes. And so it could very well be snow mold, but it's just snow mold this year along the Wasatch Front is almost non-existent because of how little snow cover we've had. And snow mold needs weeks to really become detrimental.
Okay. Well, just for, you know, doing the first fertilization of it help?
Maybe. It depends on what the problem is. If it was snow mold, it will, because it'll help the grass grow back more quickly. But it could very well be that, but there are other things that it also could be. And I'm suspicious because the snow mold is something that we're just not seeing a lot of so far this year.
Okay. Yeah, it's the first time in years and years. I mean, I've never had this before, so.
All right, Carol, thanks so much for your call. Before we take a break, Ton, I did want to answer this one question. Do I soak my seeds in water before planting them?
Not necessarily. Sometimes you do it with beans and a few other things, but
that's it.
They'll imbibe water from the soil too.
All right, we need to take a break. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Ton, next listener wants to know, they have new fruit trees they planted last year, and they're wondering, do they need to be pruned already?
They do. Boy, when they're new, it can be traumatic to you, because a lot of times the nursery trees will come kind of pre-trimmed. It doesn't mean that they're trimmed correctly, but because those trees are already 3 or 4 years old, they've already done some basic pruning for you. But if you get bare root trees, the first thing you do when you plant it in early spring is clip it at about a little below waist height and let it regrow. And people are just like, I'm not cutting my tree in half. But this is what the orchards do, and those in the know will do that also. And the reason you do that is the new branches that form, you can select from to create a proper structured canopy. Whether you're growing it, you can retrain a new trunk, but if you're growing it central leader, but you can also open it up to the open center pruning style, and it just gives you a lot more freedom. And in the future, you have a lot stronger tree. because of that. So if they were nursery trees, they do need to be trimmed because it's imperative to train those trees with the right structure and the right branch angle so that the tree doesn't collapse on itself in 5 years when you start taking heavier fruit loads from it.
All right. Bob is on the line in Lehigh. Good morning, Bob. What was your question?
Yes, we have about a 50 by 70 foot plot of land here in Lehigh that we, in our backyard that we grow in. We want to move it up high. We want to leave our corn in and our pumpkins in the ground. But we'd like to, what I'd like to know is there somewhere you can get specs on how to build these above ground things? We'd like to build as many as we can. We just are tired.
Are you
of
talking about
over.
Raised beds?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, I mean, you can download plans for them. And if you want to get them to waist height, no matter what you do, it's going to be expensive. Go ahead.
Yeah, we know that. We want to do this because we're tired of getting on our hands and knees.
Yeah. I mean, the last year my dad gardened, the only way he could pull weeds was laying on his side because his back would hurt so much. And at that point he says, this is just not worth it, you know? And then your neck hurts.
I broke my back this last year. I'm done. It's fixed, but I'm going to garden up high.
That's smart. Smart thing. So you want those around 3 feet, you know, and you can measure your waist height so that you can customize them a bit. But I mean, some general recommendations is make them so that you can reach across. And so there's a few different styles. There's one called keyhole to where you either make a square or a round bed with a section of it cut out so that you have a way to get to the middle of the bed, and then you have the bed around you. And so you'd put it about 3 feet out from where you're standing. So there are those soil styles, or you can just do the traditional rectangular style, but you need to plan on how you're going to reach the middle or if you want to reach across from one side. And so I think the principles here are going to be more important than the design's important, but what you build them out of also is going to be...
That was my biggest question, yes.
And so pressure-treated lumber is kind of frowned upon because you don't really want it near your edibles, you know, your edible vegetables, although people will sometimes use pressure-treated posts to anchor the beds and then put other wood around. And so your options would include cedar or redwood, which are going to be expensive, but cedar or redwood will last anywhere from 10 to 20 years before you may need to consider replacing it. The less expensive wood option would just be construction grade lumber, you know, 2x6s, 2x8s. And this is going to be probably really impractical if you cleaned them out every fall and removed all the soil in them and then retreated them annually with linseed oil, they would also last 10, 15, 20 years. But that is very impractical for large beds. And so if you used construction-grade lumber, some people will try lining them with pond liner to try to keep water away. That's can be problematic, but that's one thing I've seen people do. But actual construction-grade lumber will last from 5 to 10 years if you're wanting straight wood. Some other options would be metal sheeting, so like roofing, metal roofing. People use that quite frequently. I would recommend it heats up, so you might paint it white to keep it cooler in the summer. But, yeah, there's many things out there, but I think that the important thing is to build for durability and then to the height you need and to the width you need so that you can easily garden as time moves forward.
Okay. That sounds great.
All right.
Thank
Bob,
you.
Thanks so much for your call this morning. Next listener, Todd, wants to know how to deal with Bermuda grass getting into their garden.
Well, at some point, people will just mow it and let it be. If it's not too... ultimately established.
No.
There are some sprays out there that will suppress it and eventually kill it.
There's one that they mention here, Equis. I can't pronounce it. Equisetum.
Equisetum is actually a weed.
What?
It's not a spray.
Oh, they're wondering about that getting in their garden as well. Okay.
Well, we'll start with the Bermuda grass. BioAdvanced makes a product called Bermuda Grass Killer. Mm-hmm. They got to the point. And it will suppress their Bermuda grass. You have to spray it monthly during the summer. And over a period of a couple of years, it'll eventually kill the Bermuda grass. Another one also you can use spring and fall called Turflon Ester. Is a lawn weed killer that happens to suppress Bermuda grass too. And so Turflon Ester and BioAdvanced Bermuda Grass Killer are the two products. Now, when I said sometimes people just mow it and put up with it, if it is the majority of your lawn already, your option is to kill the lawn out and probably lay sod instead of seed, because if you do the seed, the Bermuda grass could reseed itself too. And so you do hit a point that it becomes very difficult, but that becomes the option and you may have to do it in sections or something. But you know, if 70% of your lawn is Bermuda grass, what are you going to do?
It's true. It's true. I don't like it, but it's true. Next person would like to know what is a fast growing shade tree that gets up to 20 feet tall?
Fast growing shade tree that gets 20 feet tall. That's pretty small. The fastest growing small tree I know of is Canada Red Chokecherry. It'll grow 18 inches to 2 feet a year.
Okay. Next question. Does USU Extension have a recommended schedule and list of products for peach orchard spraying and fertilization?
Products, not so much, because they change so rapidly. But we do have a schedule of when to spray pests and diseases if you get them. So what they would want to do is to download what's called the Home Orchard Pest Management Guide. It does have a list of sprays, but the guide hasn't been updated for a few years and some of them may be out of date. But they can also subscribe to the USU Pest Lab updates. And if you just use Google or whatever search engine you like and just search USU Pest Lab Updates subscription, it'll bring up the page. You can subscribe to that, and USU gives you current information down to the day that you need to treat. And they give you organic, conventional, and if there's non-spray options.
All right, next person wants to know, are there any ways that the autumn brilliant service berry is particularly fussy? pH, sun, water?
Not really. I mean, if you're trying to plant it in a swamp, that will kill it. Or if the soil is really salty. So if you're near one of the lakes and you know that the salt major, the electrical conductivity, is above 2.5 or 3, those are the two situations that it may struggle.
All right, we're going to take a break. David, when we come back, you will be up next. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. One of our listeners did want you to know, Tom, that instead of using lumber for their raised bed, they used pavers, and they did it 20 or 30 years ago, and they've had great success.
Yes, and that can be an investment up front, but it does. I didn't get to that before I went to break, but I wanted to mention that pavers are a great option. And if you have the skills or the money, that masonry, you know, cement or doing your own masonry, those will last, if they're done well, 50 to 100 years easily.
Almost forever, right? Almost our lifetime. Back to the phone lines. David has been waiting patiently in East Mill Creek. Hi, David. What was your question?
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. My problem started 2 years ago with a large insect infestation that killed out big patches of my lawn, followed last year by a big spurge infection, which took over the dead spots that were killed out the previous year. And we pulled and we did everything that we could do, but I want to get on top of it this year. I want to know if there's any product, any processes, anything to just try to make it that we're not out every day, you know, digging up boxes of spurge.
Well, for your mental health, I would consider taking a trip to Mesquite. Even if you don't gamble, they have a great buffet. And then maybe do some golfing.
Oh.
And then you can come back and get after it. But
okay.
As far as what I would do, is most of the lawn dead or is it just portions?
Oh, most of it is actually green. It's just there are some patches that are maybe a foot in diameter, maybe a little bit larger, but there's lots of them.
Okay, so you're going to do a few things here. Now, where the spurge is growing, is there any grass at all?
It's starting to creep back in. As we manually remove the spurge, we notice the grass starting
okay.
to creep into the spots.
Okay, so do you have a pencil and paper handy?
Yes.
Okay, so you're going to want to find a pre-emergent product containing mm-hmm. Isoxaben. And let me spell that. It's Isoxaben, I believe. That's close, Isoxaben. And it
okay.
used to be sold under the trade name of either Gallery or Galleria.
Okay.
And you can pick that up from Steve Regan or IFA. So some of the local independents, if you're, well, Mill Creek Gardens isn't there anymore, is it?
Oh, Mill Creek Gardens
Mill
Creek, is there.
Mill Creek Gardens yeah. then. I apologize. I'm getting confused with Glover's. But Mill Creek Gardens
yeah.
may carry it also. But if you can find a local farm store or independent nursery, they will have something with isoxaben in it. The reason you're using this particular pre-emergent is that it goes after broadleafed weeds like spurge much more effectively than what you normally would use for crabgrass. A lot of our crabgrass products are actually fairly ineffective. And so you put down this isoxaben sometime late March to mid-April before the spurge starts to germinate, and that mm-hmm. will greatly help. But if you put it down, you can't put grass seed down also until the label on the product you use says you can. And so you have to choose one method or the other. But if you have grass coming back, then I would use isoxaben to see if that prevents the spurge from germinating.
Now, is this a spray or is it
a granule
or both?
It usually
okay,
is a granule. So you just put it down with your fertilizer spreader. And I'd use a broadcast spreader and not just a drop.
Okay, you just answered my next question. Thank you.
All right. David, thanks for your call this morning. Don't kill off any more of my local nurseries, Tom. Do you know in my area and kind of the holiday area, there are very few nurseries left, local nurseries. So yeah, don't kill off Mill Creek Gardens.
You know, I will not. I apologize to Mill Creek. You hear about one going down every year or two. You know, Geneva Road in Utah County that's going through Vineyard, and Orem used to be a hotbed of nurseries. There were five mm-hmm. or six, and there's one or two left, but you just keep seeing them slowly go. And
it makes me so sad. I used to have like seven or eight like within a mile of my house. And now Mill Creek is the only one left.
Yeah, the larger nurseries that have the capacity to move a lot of plants are the ones that are surviving. I am noticing a lot of pop-up nurseries that mm-hmm. mainly carry annuals that stay in business since, say, early April through mid-June and then shut it down. I'm seeing a lot more of those. But for just the small mom-and-pop nurseries, they are becoming harder to find. And so in your area, you're going to get a lot better plant selection usually than what you find at the box stores. And even if you pay a bit more, I would support your local garden center.
Yeah, and I will say quality is still there as well. But they aren't as specialized. So if I need something really specialized that I don't have time to shop around, like I love going to J&J, but it's kind of far from my home, I will go to one of those too. So.
They are really great for that. And sometimes, like you said, with these specialties, you know, Alpine Gardens has a ton of dwarf conifers that you cannot find anywhere else in the state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, each nursery has its specialty. Willard Bay Gardens, more perennials than anywhere in the state.
Again, they're just so far away. I have to take a day off.
Yeah.
You know?
And so when you're in the area, you need to stop. But if we don't support them, they are going to disappear.
Yeah. Please support your local nurseries. Next listener is asking, does Roundup treat Star of Bethlehem, or do they have to dig those out?
If they cut the Star of Bethlehem, like weed whack over the top or mow and then put Roundup down, that can help. But there's actually a product called Sulfentrazone that is in Ortho's Sedge Killer, and it's in a few others. But anything with carfentrazone, or actually it's sulfentrazone, will over a few years knock out Star of Bethlehem.
Wow. Some of these problems that just take you years to
get and that's out of your yard. The best product out there for it right now.
Right now, I am amazed. My lawn is growing into an area that never had lawn in it before. You know, I told you we took out all of that oak on one side and we're going to plant these beautiful trees and things there now. And now I noticed I'm going to have to deal with the grass that is growing into that area. Ton, what do I do about that?
Dig it or spray it or cover it.
How big it is? Dig it? Okay. So spray it probably is my best option if
I
want to plant
anytime. Even if you
soon.
Have 3 inches of mulch, it'll push up through it. It's one of the few plants, that Kentucky bluegrass, that will push up through a mulch. And so it's one
trying
of those
things. Trying to eliminate
that,
the grass.
Yeah, I mean, the 3 inches will help, but it still can push up through. And so keeping it out is much easier than getting rid of it once it's in there.
Right.
So I would consider just spraying it out.
How soon can I do that?
As soon as we're consistently in the 50s.
Okay. It's going to be a month, right?
It is.
All right. And then do I have to keep spraying it or one spray just where
once
it's green,
it's sprayed
not the
out,
dirt there, right?
Then a couple times a summer will suffice.
Oh, that grass.
That's the other thing you could do. And this would be some work, is where you have your lawn grass, remove it 3 or 4 feet in and reseed it with turf-type tall fescue. And turf-type tall fescue doesn't creep like Kentucky bluegrass, but and it would transition in, but that would be a lot of work, and you would have to establish the fescue because it's a bunch grass. It wouldn't get into your flower beds and things, but it's just there's not a good solution.
You know, and it's the problem with having lived in a home for over 30 years. The grass has been there a long time, and it just continues to root and sprout up wherever it wants to.
It does, and that's why we grow it, and that's why we hate it.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, our top of the hour feature in the 10 o'clock hour is soil prep. We know you're excited to get out in the yard, and this is a good time, well, after this storm anyway, is a good time to make sure that your soil's doing better.
It is. We need to get on that soon.
Okay, the top of the hour at 9 o'clock, we talked about starting seeds indoors, and at 8 o'clock, the Fritillaria was the plant of the week. If you missed those conversations, you can find out more information on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. And as always, you can find us in podcast form at kslpodcast.com. And again, when we come back talking about soil prep, you're talking about mulch, compost. What are you talking about at the top?
Mulch, compost, if you should till, when to put it in, types of mulch and compost you can use, and what you're going to get out of it.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Come back with your calls. The phone lines are open, so you can call us at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions, and when we get to those, you know, within 15 or 20 minutes, you can text us at 575-00. We'll be right back.